Chapter 24 Teaching and Healing in the 1880s. Since the author's discovery of the might of truth in the treatment of disease as well as of sin, her system has been fully tested and has not been found wanting. Mary Baker Eddy. When the people heard the good news, they came unto her, and she received them, and spoke unto them, and healed them, that had need of healing. 1880. While Ahrens was busy plagiarizing Mrs. Eddy's class book, she was at the same time incorporating it into the next edition of Science and Health, as the chapter titled Recapitulation. The new edition of the textbook, which was preparing for publication, was by far the most important of her activities, but it was not easy to find the time, peace, and quiet necessary for this work. George Glover was a disappointment to his mother. She had hoped that he would be a help to her in her great mission, but he was a rough, boisterous, mining prospector with little interest in the mental realm or even in literacy. However, during his visit, his mother made a deep and lasting impression upon her son. In talking about his family, George told about his mother's namesake, his 3-year-old daughter, Mary Baker Glover. When he said that the child was cross-eyed, his mother exclaimed, quote, "You must be mistaken, George. Her eyes are all right," end quote. In February, after George had returned home to Deadwood, South Dakota, he related this conversation to his wife while little Mary was asleep. They wakened the child and found that her eyes were straightened. In later years, Mary B. Glover Billings wrote, "Mother has a picture of me taken before this incident, showing my eyes crossed. This healing was often told me by my father and mother, and is at this time verified by my mother who is with me." After George returned to the Midwest, the Eddies moved to a house on Shawmut Avenue in Boston, together with Mr. and Mrs. Choate. The Choates, their son, and Mrs. Choate's sister, occupied the first and third floors, and Mr. and Mrs. Eddy had the second floor. George Choate was away much of the time, endeavoring to practice Christian Science healing in Portland, Maine. On one of his visits home, he asked Mrs. Eddy's advice on a case he was treating, but not curing, even as the disciples had sought Jesus' aid in their failures. Mrs. Eddy examined the case mentally, "Miles are no deterrent to mind," and told him the belief latent that the difficulties were produced by a fall several years earlier. The effects of her mental examination and spiritual potency were immediate, as described in this letter George wrote on his return to Portland. April 2, 1880. "Last Saturday, when I was at home and you examined my patient, she had the most wonderful chemical or something of the kind that I ever heard of. She was sitting talking with some ladies and felt a little faint. Her head ached, and she said she would go to bed when she felt a crash, just as when she was thrown from a carriage, and knew nothing for 4 hours. Great black and blue spots, just where she was bruised years ago when she fell, appeared, and she acted and talked like a person under the influence of morphine. After the discoloration was gone, the cuticle came off in scales, and she is better than ever now, and walks without a cane. Has been out to ride today. What can it be? What does it mean? G.D. Choate. Though George and Clara Choate were both endeavoring to practice Christian Science, the world held many attractions for them. Their depth of interest in science and sincerity in spiritual endeavor were somewhat less than that for which the teacher yearned, so her hopes turned once again to a new student who offered greater promise. James Howard had entered into the study of science with the earnestness that Daniel Spofford had shown. He was one of the class of two that Mrs. Eddy had taught in February and was the outstanding member of the New Church of Christ Scientist, which met every Sunday afternoon at Hawthorne Hall. With the rest of the congregation, he witnessed many healings as a result of Mrs. Eddy's sermons. Healings that had resounded through the streets of Lynn at the beginning of her ministry to suffering humanity were now pealing through the streets of Boston, giving hope to the weary and attracting many hopeless sufferers to Hawthorne Hall. Some that came in on crutches left carrying them over their shoulder. A young man named Henry Littlefield, who had been a printer in Boston before his severe illness, was carried in on a stretcher. He was one who was carried in and walked out, after which he was able to resume his trade. And he was also the one out of 10 who came back to acknowledge his healing and testify to the truth. In his words, "I was born in 1846. I was attacked by inflammatory rheumatism in my early 30s, in such form that even the bed clothing was burdensome and painful. I had heard about Mrs. Eddy's meetings in Hawthorne Hall, and at the very worst stage of the belief, I was taken there on a stretcher. After the service, Mrs. Eddy came down from the platform and greeted personally the small group of about a dozen people who were there. When she came to me and shook my hand and spoke to me, I felt the healing and responded by telling her that I was healed. I walked out of the hall rejoicing, and that belief never made itself real to me again." In the spring of 1880, a woman came to Mrs. Eddy with a problem very different from that of Mr. Littlefield. She had been seeking help of physicians for 19 years for her son, who had been born deaf and dumb. The boy, Hanover P. Smith, had been in an institution for deaf mutes when his mother took him to Mrs. Eddy, who healed him quickly. Perhaps 19-year-old Hanover was the youngest member of Mrs. Eddy's class of 5 students that May, and he was also the most eager to enter into the public practice of Christian Science. Despite the demonology Mrs. Eddy was constantly encountering, and which she was exposing fully in her revision of Science and Help, the Good Word, the Gospel of Christian Science, was finding its way to receptive individuals. The church was growing and had put out a circular which read in part, "This church is designed to perpetuate the teachings of Jesus, to reinstate primitive Christianity, and to restore its lost element of healing. These words fell like manna upon the ears of one young woman who had longed for healing and understanding. Julia Bartlett was the first of Mrs. Eddy's students to remain loyal to our leader and an active practitioner of Christian Science all the years of Mrs. Eddy's sojourn with us. Her introduction to Christian Science is worth the telling. Julia Bartlett's story, in her own words. There are pleasant memories of my childhood days, of the dear parents' wise and loving care, and the joy and happiness they brought into my life. Suddenly, the change came. After 1 week's illness, my dear father passed on. My mother survived him, but 3 years. We were left 6 fatherless and motherless children. I, the eldest, was 16 years of age, while the youngest was but a babe of 3 years, a delicate little girl who needed much a mother's care and love, as did all. We were able to make remuneration for all that was done for us, but that seemingly made no difference. The sad little faces told the story of the hardships that were endured, and while my heart ached for the little ones more than for myself, I was powerless to save them from it. As time went on, and I was beyond the school days, my thought continued to open to the truth sufficiently to drop some of my old theological views. I felt there was a truth beyond what I knew or had been able to find, and more there was a longing and reaching out for it, trying to find it. At this stage of experience, I was taken very ill, and at different times, my life was despaired of by physicians. Completely shut out from the world for 5 years, helpless on my bed, weakened by suffering, I could still be patient and cheerful and not a complaining invalid. Twice I was removed on my bed to different cities to be treated by other physicians. All were most interested and kind, and I appreciated their efforts, but material remedies could not heal me. After 7 years, there was improvement, but no hopes were given of a final recovery. One day a letter came from a friend telling the first I had ever heard of Christian Science. This was in April 1880, when the science was little known. She also sent a little circular giving account of the first Christian Science church, which said, quote, "This church is designed to perpetuate the teachings of Jesus, to reinstate primitive Christianity, and to restore its lost element of healing," end quote. I asked my friend to recommend a practitioner to take my case, and at the same time, I sent for the book Science and Help. She went to Mrs. Eddy for advice, and she put me under the care of her husband, Dr. Asa G. Eddy. I began to improve immediately and was getting my freedom. I felt like one let out of prison. The fetters of material beliefs and laws were giving way to the higher law of spirit, and the sufferings were correspondingly disappearing. I never could describe the sense of freedom that came with a glimpse of this glorious truth. The world was another world to me. All things were seen from a different viewpoint, and there was a halo of beauty over all. In the eyes of the students, the little church was progressing, and all was well. From Mrs. Eddy's standpoint, the progress was far from satisfactory. Physical healing is but the first step. Purification of thought, motive, and character must follow. But most of the students were completely satisfied with only the physical healing, and more often than not, called upon their teacher for help with that. Bickering and jealousies from within and malice from without were driving Mrs. Eddy once again into the wilderness. So on the 23rd of May, she preached a farewell sermon. The students were stunned and temporarily united in requesting her to remain with them. To their resolution, she responded by agreeing to stay and preach through the month of June. But her work on the revision of science and health demanded her undivided attention. It was imperative that she leave the students to their own devices and give her time unreservedly to God's work.